Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Today we'll have some important stories, starting with sound clips from that very contentious town hall held by Congressman Duncan Hunter. Hear how he responded to constituents' concerns over health care and investigating Russian influence on the election, and how the audience responded, including one public official present who announced that she'll be running against Hunter in the next election. Then on our Capitol Report, learn how Donald Trump's proposed budget could close off some public lands to hunting, fishing, and other recreational activities. On Green Scene, learn why Trump's efforts to roll back vehicle fuel efficiency standards is setting the scene for a battle with California to protect clean air and consumers' rights. El Cajon's City Council is considering banning City Council members from using cell phones, iPads, and laptop computers during public hearings. Find out why and the reason for one councilman's vocal opposition on today's show. Then we'll have news about two bills by State Senator Tony Atkins to help conservation efforts along the San Diego River here in East County and fund affordable housing. Learn about prescribed burns planned by CAL FIRE in our region and hear why supervisors are seeking new funding sources for road repairs. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with Bonnie Baranoff from La Mesa Conversations and Lois Knowlton from the First United Methodist Church in La Mesa. They'll be talking about some substantial efforts to help the growing number of homeless people in La Mesa, and an event coming up this Thursday where you can hear speakers on this issue and bring goods to help the homeless. Next up, we'll be saluting a local hero, Ellen Ochoa, who has just been inducted into the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame. Then we'll take you on a road trip to Lake Jennings, where you can now camp out in teepees. We'll also tell you about a local landmark in Campo, the historic Old Stone Store, and its colorful history. Learn about San Diego State's historic anniversary this month. And finally, from Public News Service, we'll have the latest on some national news stories, including the health care bill, confirmation hearings on President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, and World Water Day. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. Today we have some audio clips from that very contentious town hall meeting held by Congressman Duncan Hunter last week at the Ramona main stage. Now, bear in mind, this event was held in the reddest, most conservative part of his district at a venue owned by a Tea Party member. And yet this crowd, like many at town halls across the nation, was not buying what Hunter was selling. One of the most contentious topics was health care. Hunter argued that the Republican health care plan would increase competition in the marketplace, but his constituents peppered him repeatedly to support affordability, since access is meaningless if you can't afford it. The American Medical Association, the AARP, that's the American Association of Retired Persons, have come out against the bill, which the Congressional Budget Office now estimates will make 24 million people lose their health care and raise rates the most on the poorest senior citizens. Consumers Union, which consumers rely on to rank cars and household appliances, has given the Republican health care plan an F. That's a failing grade. As consumers in East County learn more about the bill, many of them raised their voices to let their congressman know their views on this important issue. Here's an excerpt of what it sounded like inside Congressman Hunter's town hall.
You know, I'm not going to bypass this. We're not guaranteeing health care for everyone. We're guaranteeing access. Access to health care for everyone.
As we find out more about the new health care, the details are coming out that it is less affordable and way less accessible. There's a lot of people that are going to lose their health care. So I just want to know how you're going to support the people in your district, your constituents, who are dramatically affected by this. Then they're often the most vulnerable. So specifically, I'd like you to speak to the age-based tax credits instead of the way that the ACA is structured now, and how you plan to address that when your constituents will be affected.
Okay, thank you.
Obamacare is falling apart and has raised insurance costs for everybody. It's funny. You have businesses from Fallbrook, Temecula, to El Cajon, Shanty, Lakeside, here in Ramona, that have had to let people go or put them as part-time because of Obamacare. Obamacare has put people out of work so that they couldn't pay for insurance in the first place if they wanted to. Here's the key. Grow the economy, put more money into your pockets, and make competition, make health insurance like everything else in this country, where the accessibility goes up, the quality goes up, and you're able to pay for it because you have a job. Because Donald Trump fixed this economy. That's what we need.
Congressman Hunter has been an early and staunch supporter of Donald Trump, backing his presidential campaign and the major policies of the Trump administration. At the town hall, Hunter wound up on the defensive, however, over his views on an independent investigation into Trump's ties to Russia and Russian interference in the U.S. election. He even stated that he believes Trump's unsubstantiated claim that former President Obama ordered electronic eavesdropping at Trump Tower, a claim that the FBI, the Republican chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and Obama have all said is not true. Here's what Congressman Hunter had to say on the issue and how his constituents responded.
Like you and every other patriotic American here, I was outraged to learn the official findings of our own intelligence community, which stated the Russians interfered with our election in favor of one candidate over another. And that candidate is now president. Will you vote for an independent investigation to root out all aspects of their interference wherever it may lead?
Here's what we know. The Russians hacked the Democrat National Committee server and added a bunch of emails from Hillary Clinton and her campaign manager. Okay? They didn't hack the voting booths. They didn't come in with a gun to anybody's head as you have to vote this way. There are four congressional investigations going on right now into the Russians. Okay? If one comes to the Armed Services Committee, because we might take our own hack at it on the military side of things, and I'm asked to be involved in that, absolutely. We ought to investigate because the Russians haven't. This is not an issue. I don't think that they affected the election, but here's what they do. Hey, I'm sorry, Trump won again. I'm sorry. But here's what the Russians do. The Russians do hack us all the time. The Russians hack U.S. government. They hack U.S. military institutions. They hack all the guys that make our stuff: Boeing, Northrop Grumman, NASCO. All the companies that do defense stuff. The Russians do hack. So yes, absolutely, let's look into that. What I'm not going to go and vote for is a witch hunt by the Department of Justice or the FBI or the intelligence communities that have been infiltrated with seditious Obama folks and want to go after this president. I'm not going to do it. You guys have heard the term deep state. You guys have heard the term deep state? You have tens of thousands of Obama, not tens of thousands of Obama appointees, thousands of Obama appointees and people that worked under that administration who hate Donald Trump as much as you do. They're trying to take him down from the inside. There is right now, in my view, I think that Donald Trump did have his phone conversations and emails intercepted. And those of you that believe in democracy and free elections, to tell me that a sitting president whose party is running for the presidency can wiretap and intercept another candidate's phone, I would think that you would be for freedom and liberty, not for an Orwellian government that controls us. Which is what we have right now.
Right.
Hey, so here's what's pretty funny. Trump used the term, really quick, Trump used the term wiretap. When Trump tweeted out wiretap, guess what? We haven't wiretapped since we've had cell phones. So the intelligence community and the FBI and the DOJ could actually say, we have never wiretapped Trump's phone. Here's what they call it. No, I'm being serious. Here's what they call it now. They call it intercepting. If Trump would have tweeted out, my phone calls and my information has been intercepted, they would not be able to deny it. Remember, these are all lawyers. Are you telling me you guys love lawyers too?
At least five candidates have thus far said they plan to run against Congressman Hunter on the Democratic side of the aisle. One of those is Gloria Chadwick, a nurse who works with veterans at the VA hospital in San Diego. She also serves on the Grossmont Healthcare District Board, and she announced her candidacy during Duncan Hunter's town hall, drawing a strong response from the audience.
The question I wanted to ask is, what veterans health care is available for veterans who do not qualify for VA benefits? You know the ones I'm talking about. We were talking about the ones who, for whatever reason, they were separated from the military, but they did honorably serve the service. And then I have to say another thing, that I am one of your constituents. I am a registered nurse, work for the VA. I'm also elected director for the Grossmont Healthcare District, which is a large hospital. We see a lot of patients go through the district. I went to the inauguration to support the president that was elected, duly elected. I participated in the Women's March. And when I came back, I read that article. And I have to tell you, as my representative, I am just startled by the corrupt nature of it, the dishonorable conduct. And you do not deserve to represent us. And I'm here to tell you that because of the corruption, I'm going to represent you in 2008.
Number one, anybody that has a service-connected disability will, number one, get a check from the VA, and number two, is guaranteed to get health care from the VA if they have a service-connected disability.
We're here to help.
Pressed by his constituents to hold another town hall, Hunter said that he will, but did not set a date. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Donald Trump's budget slashes funding for agencies responsible for conservation. Not only is this harmful for wildlife and habitat, it also means that more public lands will be closed to fishing and hunting. The impact will hit hardest in rural communities, where residents often rely on hunting and fishing on public lands to put food on families' tables. Locally, San Diego's East County has multiple public lands that could be closed off to hunting, fishing, and other activities. Whit Fosberg is president of the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. He warns that with the magnitude of these cutbacks, the conservation legacy left to us by Theodore Roosevelt and others would be undone very quickly, and the effects would be felt on public and private lands and waters in every corner of the nation. Trump aims to cut billions of dollars to agencies that protect public lands, including a 12% cut at the Department of the Interior, 21% at the Department of Agriculture, which includes the National Forest Service, and 31% at the Environmental Protection Agency. The Land and Water Conservation Fund for Enhancing Habitat and Sportsman's Access would also be slashed. By contrast, the Trump budget would dramatically increase money for energy drilling and mining on our public lands. A press release from the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership states, undermanned agencies could be faced with the choice to close down access points, stop habitat management, or place heavy financial burdens on the state, which sets a dangerous precedent for the transfer of management authority on America's public lands. The conservation group concludes, expecting cash-strapped states to pay for natural resources, a critical part of the federal-state partnership, is troublesome and may lead to less management, less enforcement, and stressed fish and wildlife populations. Two key programs providing tax payments to local counties with public lands could get no funding at all, breeding even more unrest in western states with vast federal public lands. Agencies fear that guidelines not yet issued could force even deeper cuts in programs that people who enjoy hunting, fishing, and recreational use of public lands enjoy. Desiree Sorensen Groves with the National Wildlife Association is also concerned. She warns that there could be closures of national wildlife refuges nationwide. Without enough funding and staff, it would be impossible to keep open hunting and fishing access. Educational and volunteer programs would also be shut down. Even if states can help, she observes, they don't have enough funding to take over every program currently paid for by the federal government. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Green Scene Report. California has threatened legal action after President Donald Trump ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to abandon strict fuel efficiency standards for vehicles and rules that limit emission of greenhouse gases. Fuel efficiency standards have been increased in the past and each time resulted in innovation by the auto industry to attain those standards. The latest new rules adopted during the Obama administration would require vehicles to become even more fuel efficient starting in 2020. And for vehicles to average 54 miles per gallon by 2025. But now, Trump wants to roll that requirement back. Due to past serious air pollution problems in California, our state has long received waivers that have allowed California to adopt stricter vehicle emission standards than the national standard. State officials have gone to court before to protect their right to enact tough standards to protect clean air and public health, winning a challenge against the Bush administration. If weaker national standards are adopted and the Trump administration fights California's long-standing waiver, which allows our state to have the nation's toughest clean air standards, it could set up an epic court battle over states' rights. Consumers could also be forced back to buying gas-guzzling cars so it would cost more to fill up at your tank. Trump says that common sense changes are needed after pressures from automobile industry lobbyists. So the EPA is set to reopen the rulemaking process for mileage standards and will decide by mid-2018 whether to scrap the current standards. A climate change denier, Trump campaigned on increasing production of fossil fuels such as oil and now seeks to boost consumption of fossil fuels too. Teresa Langer with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy says the Trump administration's plan to cut fuel efficiency standards puts at risk tens of billions of dollars of fuel savings for consumers and big reductions in tailpipe emissions. The EPA found in January that the Obama-era standards remain feasible and are cost-effective, even with lower gas prices. That review also documented health benefits that the standards would achieve. Langer believes that automakers who lobbied for weaker fuel efficiency are doing their industry a disservice, since any delay in setting standards introduces uncertainty in a global marketplace where consumers want fuel-efficient and low-emission vehicles. Delaying making changes that consumers want would put U.S. automakers at a competitive disadvantage compared to foreign automakers. California is already moving to fight Trump's action. State Attorney General Javier Becerra has filed a legal motion to defend California's rules. The court filing on behalf of California concludes any weakening or delay of the national standards will result in increased harms to our natural resources, our economy, and our people.
The El Cajon City Council is considering banning council members from using electronic devices such as cell phones, iPads, and laptop computers during public hearings. Mayor Bill Wells introduced the proposal, arguing that it's in the public interest.
Item 6.3 is a discussion regarding private phone and device use during city council meetings. You know, sometimes we're a little bit behind on technology. Technology goes faster than tradition, and many cities have asked their council members not to have cell phones, not to have computers or other communications devices when they're on the dais, especially during city council meetings. it makes a lot of sense for several reasons. One is respect to the public. I think we should probably not be on our phones while we're doing the public's business. But then there's a more complicated issue, and that's if questions arise that perhaps council members are talking to each other during council meetings, encouraging each other to vote a certain way, that would be a violation of the Brown Act, and it would not be transparent. And so for those reasons, I think we should follow suit with what many other cities have done and put on the agenda an item that would prohibit us from using these devices on the dais.
Councilman Steve Goebel said the issue was raised at a recent League of California Cities conference where transparency concerns were raised.
And this topic was brought up twice in the context of encouraging transparency with the public, that if they don't know what we're doing, it instills a lack of faith, transparency, and it was an interesting topic at that League of California Cities conference.
Councilman Gary Kendrick agreed that the public deserves members' full attention.
I think it's just plain rude for a council member to be tapping away on their cell phone or their notebook while the public is talking to us. You're not paying attention. And what we're here for is to pay attention to what you're saying.
One concern raised by several members was the potential for a council member to be communicating with others or looking up information to which the public wasn't privy, an action that the city attorney said would be illegal during a hearing. Councilman Ben Colasso argued that there is no evidence that that's been going on here, and he noted the California Supreme Court ruled earlier this month that communications by public officials on private devices are public records, so anyone who wants to find out if a member was having outside communications during a hearing via email or text messaging could find out through a public records request. Colasso said he would support banning text messaging on phones, but not prohibiting council members from taking notes on an iPad or laptop. He suggested that Wells was singling him out and questioned the legality of the proposal.
Now, I take some issue with that because I'm the only one up here with a laptop, and this is just the way I take notes. So it's not a matter of speaking with the people sitting there, or it's not a matter of giving undivided attention. You could do that with taking notes on a laptop, writing something down using a pencil, or chiseling it on a stone tablet. It doesn't matter how you take notes. And it would be illegal to put parameters and barriers on how you can take notes because it would impede on my job scope and the ability to perform my duty.
One solution could be for the city to provide iPads or laptops with Wi-Fi disabled, allowing council members to take notes without having internet communication abilities during a public hearing. The council voted 4-1 to ask staff to bring back a proposal for restricting the use of electronic devices by council members, with Councilman Colasso casting the only no vote. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Two bills authored by San Diego State Senator Tony Adkins have cleared key policy committees. One will help enhance portions of the San Diego River in East County. The other provides funding to build affordable housing. Senate Bill 214 was approved by the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee on an 8-1 vote. The bill strengthens the capacity of the San Diego River Conservancy to protect and enhance historic, cultural, and natural resources along the 52-mile San Diego River. The bill adds representation from the City of Santee and the Cumie de Gaño Land Conservancy to the Conservancy's Board of Directors and provides the Conservancy with greater ability to engage in climate change projects and environmental justice programs and enter into joint power agreements. Senate Bill 2, the Building Homes and Jobs Act, made it through the Senate Governance and Finance Committee on a 5-2 vote. The bill creates a permanent source of funding for affordable housing through a small document recording fee on certain real estate transactions, excluding residential and commercial property sales. The bills now head to Senate Appropriation Committee, the last stop for legislation on the path to the Senate floor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
If you see smoke in East County this week, don't panic. Cal Fire will be conducting prescribed burns over the next 2 weeks, starting with an area south of Pine Valley. The burns are designed to help reduce vegetation and invasive weeds, providing fuel breaks to help stop future wildfires. Smoke from the prescribed burns will be visible across San Diego County, according to Cal Fire. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The County Board of Supervisors voted 4-0 on Tuesday to direct staff to come up with a plan in 90 days for new funding sources for road repairs. The latest pavement condition index back in September gave the county a score of just 60, or fair, and that was before winter rains and flooding caused cracks and potholes to proliferate. The supervisor set a goal to raise that score to 70 or very good within 5 years. Chairwoman Diane Jacobs said it's a hard pill to swallow to admit the county has a problem keeping streets safe. The county has been getting less money from the state for road repairs and maintenance due to falling gas tax revenue statewide. Gas taxes have fallen from 39.5 cents a gallon on average 3 years ago to 27.8 cents today due to lower fuel prices. In addition, more people are driving fuel-efficient vehicles, so they're using less gas. Supervisor Bill Horn also accused legislators of diverting some gas tax revenues for purposes other than funding road repairs. He wants the county to be a squeaky wheel asking the state for more money. Jacob indicated she will send letters to Governor Jerry Brown and state legislators, also asking staff to reach out to the local congressional members and Trump administration. The latter could prove challenging with the new budget proposed by Trump slashing funding for programs across the board. The president has indicated, however, that he wants to create an infrastructure program, leaving open the door for getting funds for local projects added into an infrastructure bill if Congress votes to approve it. Last year, the county had to spend a portion of its revenues on repaving roadways, but Jacob noted that deferring maintenance can create even costlier repairs later on. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jim Brewster.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in East County. Today I have two very special guests, Bonnie Baranoff, who is on the steering committee of La Mesa Conversations, and Lois Knowlton, who chairs a community outreach committee for the La Mesa First United Methodist Church. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miriam, for having us here today.
Thank you very much.
Now, Bonnie, tell us a little bit about La Mesa Conversations for people who may not be familiar with your nonprofit organization and its mission.
Well, thanks, Miriam. La Mesa Conversations came about 2.5 years ago, and just a few folks in La Mesa found out that each of us, through mutual acquaintances, were interested in some of the same issues of La Mesa, whether it was affordable housing, business improvement, jobs, transportation, etc. And we were brought together and started to talk about how we, with other community members, could talk about amongst ourselves, talk about what the issues are, what we can do together as a community to help solve them, and do it in a more, I'd say, formal kind of way. So we came together, we had our first event in September of 2015, and that was about the future of water in La Mesa, when water was an even more exciting and controversial issue than it is today.
Right. Thankfully, we've had some rain to help temporarily solve that problem. Now, I understand that you have a wonderful event coming up on Thursday, March 23rd at 5:30 p.m. at Johnny B's. The topic is going to be homelessness. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. So every other month we have what we call a no-host informal mixer. And that's what this is going to be in March, is We're going to join together from 5:30 to 7:30 at Johnny B's on La Mesa Boulevard in the Village. We have some very special guests. One is with us here today in the studio. Talk about homelessness in La Mesa. How many folks are homeless in La Mesa that are verified or not so much verified? And what we can do as a community to help these individuals and some of the efforts that are going on now.
Right, and I understand that people can bring items directly to the meeting that are needed by the homeless, and we're going to be talking a little more soon about just what items are needed, so listeners, please stay tuned. Now, Lois, you're going to be one of the speakers at the event. Can you tell us about what your community outreach committee at La Mesa First United Methodist Church is doing to help the homeless in La Mesa?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to tell you a little bit about this. Our church has a long history, in fact, 30 years that we've been hosting a interfaith shelter network that we're on a rotation 2 weeks every year. For 30 years, we have hosted groups.
Very good.
As far as the homeless, that has been relatively new with our community outreach, although 12 years ago we started taking contributions from the community to help especially families with school children who were homeless. That, I guess, would give you sort of the history. Now we have actually a Saturday morning event, the last Saturday of every month, where we actually recruit homeless from the streets and bring them and serve them a meal, give them food for the lunch, and get a haircut and get blood pressure taken, and a lot of events of let's say, support things for the homeless.
What a wonderful thing to do, and I'm sure that the homeless must be very appreciative. So you help them get clothing suited to job interviews, for example?
Absolutely. That's a very big part of it, that you look at them sometimes when they walk in the door, and you should take a before and after, and when they go out the door, how much better they do look.
Wow, you're giving me an article idea. We should come by someday and do a story just on that.
That would be great.
About how many homeless people are there in La Mesa, and is the problem getting worse lately?
Well, it's hard to put a number on it because we have this point in time count that happens every year. We have actually hosted that. We are the host church, and people go out at very early hours of the morning and count people who are either sleeping in their cars or on the street or are in a shelter. And I think the number was something, the last year was between 15 and 20, something like that.
That's the official number, but I know you've told me that you believe it's a lot higher. Can you give us an idea of what makes you think that and just how serious the problem might be?
Well, first, I'm sure if you ask any policeman on our streets in La Mesa, they will tell you we have at least a couple hundred that are living on the streets.
Wow.
But in terms of the school district, these children that you don't see who are homeless are actually recorded by, they have a counselor there who is responsible, and he has stated that it was well over 300 in our La Mesa Spring Valley School District.
Wow. That's shocking, and it's so heartbreaking to think about children being out on the streets or without a home, that, you know, the kind of thing all of us grew up and take for granted, really. Bonnie, if people listening want to come to your meeting of the La Mesa Conversations, and again, listeners, if you just tuned in, that's going to be on Thursday the 23rd from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Johnny B's in La Mesa, and you'll be able to hear Lois and some other speakers educate you about the homeless issue in La Mesa. If people want to come to that meeting and bring items to donate that will help the homeless through the program that Lois is heading up at the La Mesa First United Methodist Church, what can they bring?
Thanks for asking, Miriam. So Fresh Start Saturday, as Lois mentioned earlier, is hosted by the church on the last Saturday of each month from 9 a.m. until just about noon. And it gives our friends, our homeless citizen neighbors on the street, a chance to come in, have a hot breakfast, take a shower, get their blood pressure taken, get some new clothes, get a haircut, a shave, and just really feel much better about themselves on the way out. And as Lois said, there's a noticeable difference and a smile on their face when they leave. But some of the things that we can use are, you know, we're usually covered for the food that we're preparing in the morning, volunteer servers and cleaners and other folks that are helping in the morning will bring prepared dishes. But what we can use are some food items that are non-perishable that we can include in the bagged lunches that we share with folks as they're heading out the door, or that the church can use throughout the week for folks that come in off the street and might be looking for a nibble or just something to, you know, just to quench their hunger. It can be bottled waters. It can be, and it might not sound that nutritious, but things like Pop-Tarts and crackers and cookies, things that aren't going to expire, that are light, easy to carry. And then also on the clothing side, fresh new socks, new underwear. Think about if you were on the streets and you had absolutely nothing, what could you use? You could use belts. Folks are using shoelaces to tie up their pants. Worthy shoes, clothes that you could use if you were trying to get a job, not just some old jeans and an old t-shirt or sweatshirt that somebody's thrown in a bag. So just think about what you would need if you were living on the streets and could use a tune-up.
Thank you very much for sharing that information. Lois, you've told me that the church is looking at creating a shelter of sorts. La Mesa, of course, does not have a homeless shelter at all right now. They rely on sending folks to other places like San Diego or El Cajon that do have one. Tell us what you're doing.
I'm happy to share that information. We have a new pastor at our church, Pastor Albert Kim, who, when he came to our church, he said that the downstairs, that's the part of the building that's underground, has been underutilized, and that the need to have our offices on a first level was important. And he said, we should be doing something for the community. And we expect him to be at the gathering on the 23rd to give a little more information. Unfortunately, our church was flooded during and in the part where we wanted to make the shelter.
Oh, no. So do you need some help then to get that cleaned up and fixed up?
I think that there's some meetings in process now in which they're trying. I know that they have had blowers and all kinds of even engineers to figure out, because you may know that the church, our church, is on the corner of Spring and Lemon. We're the most urban and the one that gets approached probably most frequently by people who are homeless.
And it is the oldest church in La Mesa.
Yes, over a century old. And it is very much an area, a church that's been actively involved in community outreach. And you mentioned affordable housing. And certainly we believe, as do some of our council members, that the lack of affordable housing is what is causing the increase in the homeless on the streets. And so we've been an advocate for affordable housing for a long time in this, through this community outreach. But as far as the transitional housing, I know our pastor has said it's heartbreaking when somebody comes to the door and says, I just need a place to stay tonight. I'm going to be headed for another city, but I don't have any place to stay. And he always has to say, no, we are not licensed. We don't have a place in our church. So it was really because of his vision that we're in a very exciting time in the life of our church.
Marvelous. Now, is the city councils and the staff of the city, are they supportive of your efforts to create a transitional shelter in the basement at your church once you get the flooding cleared out?
The two council members that we have talked directly about this and asked if they would support it are Christine Alessio and Colin Parent. And both of them have said that they think this is a good idea. And Christine Alessio, who used to be the chair of the Planning Commission, did some investigation into zoning rules and said that we're welcome to do it.
Oh, that's wonderful. I know she is told me before on the show that she's had a relative that was homeless at one time. So
yes,
I think she's her sister, yeah. So she's very understanding of the needs of the homeless, as is Councilman Parent. So it sounds like you just need one more vote and you could be good to go.
we think it's going to be a journey, and we know one step at a time.
Very good. Well, whenever that's coming up for official hearing before the council, I'm sure you'll let us know. But in the meantime, listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Lois Knowlton from the First United Methodist Church in La Mesa and with Bonnie Baranoff from La Mesa Conversations about the special event they're having coming up on Thursday the 23rd from 5:30 to 7:30 at Johnny B's Restaurant in downtown La Mesa, where you can come, hear speakers about the homeless, bring items to donate that will help the homeless, and also it's a mixer. You can mix and mingle and meet some of your neighbors here in La Mesa. Now, if people want to get more information, can each of you give me some contact information for your organizations? Bonnie, how can people reach La Mesa Conversations?
Right. Thanks, Miriam. Sure. This is, you know, the mixer that's coming up is just one of our many events that we hold throughout the year. So please, we welcome you to join us at lamesaconversations.org. And from there, you can also reach us directly through our contact us page at lamesaconversations@gmail.com. And we look forward to seeing all of you at Thursday's event and at our future events.
Very good. And Lois, how could people reach the La Mesa First United Methodist Church if they want to get involved with your community outreach committee to help the homeless or help on the affordable housing project?
Well, we also have a website where the contact information is, and the actual phone number for our office is 619-466-4163. And to just express interest in community outreach and how they might help would be wonderful.
Marvelous. Well, I want to thank both of you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thanks, Miriam.
Thank you very much.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
If you love camping but don't want to lug around camping gear, now you can camp out at Lake Jennings in a teepee. Teepee is a Lakota Sioux Indian word meaning living in. Long ago, the Native Americans used buffalo hides to make their teepees, which were toted on horseback from site to site across the Great Plains. Lake Jennings' modern-day teepees are made of canvas from Colorado and pine wood poles from Montana. They're spacious. Each measures 20 feet in diameter with room to sleep an entire family. Also new at Lake Jennings are kayak rentals. It takes about an hour to paddle around the beautiful lake with mountain views or just float for a while and let the stress melt away. The lake also offers rowboats and motorboats, fishing, miles of hiking trails, a kids' playground, tent camping, RV camping, and a group camping site. A morning on the water, afternoon on the trail, and evening by a campfire is an idyllic way to relax and feel the rejuvenating power of nature. Though you can easily envision yourself living in the past as you unwind in a teepee by the shores of Lake Jennings, the lake does have some modern-day conveniences, including free Wi-Fi. Now, the teepees, kayaks, and other new additions here are all part of a successful effort to save this campground from closing. Just 3 years ago, when Helix Water District took back ownership of the lake from the County of San Diego, the campground was losing money, and some directors wanted to shut it down. But Director Joel Scalziti, who was newly elected back then, convinced the board to let him form a committee to find ways to save the campground. Scalziti now says he's really proud about turning this campground over the past 3 years. Now it's finally in the green, he announced. The lake is actually a reservoir, storing treated Colorado River water for use across East County, as well as a hidden gem for outdoor enthusiasts to discover. It's located in Lakeside, just 20 minutes from San Diego off of Interstate 8, though it feels like a world away. Scalziti credits Kyra Haley, the lake recreation manager, for coming up with successful ideas to save the lake. Haley calls Lake Jennings a great, great place and says she loves taking a morning float on the lake's calm waters in a kayak with her morning cup of coffee. The teepees are already proving to be revenue generators in their first weeks of operation, and all you have to do is show up and bring your sleeping bags. The teepees have drawn one criticism. Rudy Reyes, an archaeology instructor, notes that teepees are not indigenous to San Diego County, where the Kumeyaay Native Americans originally lived in dwellings made of willows. Reyes says Helix Water should have consulted local tribes before adding the teepees, but there's a simple solution, he agrees. He hopes to see an educational exhibit added at the lake to teach visitors about local Kumeyaay history, which dates back 12,000 years, as well as more facts about teepees. For Scalziti, the teepees were part of a broader effort to save this local treasure and provide a unique experience for campers. He concludes, "We love to feel that we have something here for the community, a place for recreation, a place where people can come and bring their families and create memories for their kids so that when they grow up, they can bring their kids here too." Reporting from Lake Jennings on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Ellen Ochoa, who was raised in East County, gained fame as the first Hispanic woman astronaut in space, and now she's being honored with induction into the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame. I remember Ellen as the brightest kid in class when we were students together at Parkway Middle School. She went on to graduate from Grossmont High, earn a bachelor's degree in physics from San Diego State University, as well as master's and doctoral degrees in electoral engineering from Stanford. She participated in 4 space shuttle missions, including the first docking mission with the International Space Station. She previously received the Distinguished Service Medal, NASA's highest award, and currently she's the director of the Johnson Space Center in Houston. Ellen Ochoa issued this statement about being named to the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame. "I'm honored to be recognized among generations of astronauts who were at the forefront of exploring our universe for the benefit of humankind." She added, "I hope to continue to inspire our nation's youth to pursue careers in science, technology, engineering, and math so they, too, may reach for the stars." Congratulations to a true local hero, Ellen Ochoa, from those of us at East County Magazine and KNSJ. This is Miriam Raftery. Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started. And there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gaskell brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and an African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
Welcome to the Daily Newscast for Public News Service for Monday, March 20th, 2017. I'm Veronica Carter. Here's what's making news today. House Speaker Paul Ryan says he'll change the new health care bill a little bit before Thursday's vote. Two new reports say President Trump's pick for the Supreme Court has not protected the rights of students with disabilities, and conservation is being stressed ahead of World Water Day. In the news, a showdown vote on the GOP health care plan is expected Thursday. House Speaker Paul Ryan says he'll seek some changes to provide more help to older people. Congressional Budget Office analysis last week concluded they would likely pay higher premiums under the bill. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul says the plan won't work.
The death spiral that everybody's talking about will continue under the Paul Ryan plan. And my fear is that a year from now, people are going to come back and we're going to have all the same arguments again, that insurance premiums are still going through the roof and we still have a mess.
Ryan over the weekend said he'd like to see more help for people in their 50s and 60s. He says that's one of several possible revisions to help round up enough House votes for the bill. According to two new reports, Judge Neil Gorsuch, President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, has repeatedly failed to protect the rights of students with disabilities. Eric Galatas tells us Gorsuch is set to testify before the U.S. Senate today.
National Education Association President Lily Eskelson Garcia, who taught students with special needs during her 20-year classroom career, says everyone should be concerned by the trend in Gorsuch's record.
He's endorsed the lowest expectation for students with disabilities, and he's allowed schools to provide our highest need students with the bare minimum of an educational benefit.
Reports from the NEA and the Bazelon Center for Mental Health Law point to one case as an example where an autistic student's progress was dramatically reversed after switching schools. The parents sued the second school district, but Gorsuch sided with the district, ruling the student was only entitled to make progress that was slightly above the lowest possible standard.
A warming climate and possible long-term drought is threatening Arizona's water supply. Part of the solution could be hiding beneath our feet. More from Dennis Newman.
Yuma, Arizona is 75 miles away from the nearest ocean, which makes it an unlikely spot to find a water desalinization plant. But in 1992, the Yuma desalting plant went online to remove salt from agricultural runoff and to increase the supply of fresh water in the Colorado River. Severe flooding shut down the plant after a few months, and it's been mothballed for almost all of its 25-year history. Chuck Collum of the Central Arizona Project says the plant may have a new life, freshening up Arizona's brackish groundwater, water that is otherwise too salty to drink.
We think that brackish groundwater resources can increase the reliability of existing water supplies and provide new water supplies for the state of Arizona.
It's more than just a drop in the bucket. Experts have identified six major sources of brackish groundwater across the state, enough to supply fresh water for 400 to 600,000 homes. But getting started is expensive. The Bureau of Reclamation, which operates the Yuma plant, says going back online will cost $30 to $50 million. I'm Dennis Newman.
Wednesday is World Water Day, and people are being asked to step up conservation to help people in this country and all over the world. According to the UN, there are more than 663 million people living without a safe water supply close to their home. Although it's not at crisis level in most of the U.S., safe water has been brought to the forefront recently because of contamination in Flint, Michigan. Dan Hasseltine is the lead singer of the band Jars of Clay, which was formed in the 1990s by four students at Greenville College in Illinois. He says during a trip to Africa to visit areas devastated by the AIDS crisis, Van was shocked to see people digging for water in dry riverbeds.
And it didn't take long to kind of put some of the pieces together that if people are wrestling with this disease that destroys the immune system, and then they're having to drink water that is filled with bacteria and disease, it was the water ultimately that was killing people.
Back at home, Hasseltine helped start Blood Water, which partners with African grassroots organizations to combat HIV and AIDS and the water crisis. He believes getting involved in the effort to bring clean water to those in need may be just what we need. He calls it a good respite from the political strife that's been happening in America.
We just need a breath. We need somebody to tell us a better story that we can connect with, something that just means a little bit more.
If you'd like tips on water conservation efforts, you can go to unwater.org.
Ohio's opiate epidemic has not let up, with reports of drug overdose deaths making daily headlines. And poison control centers are playing a vital role.
In 2014, 2,400 Ohioans died from unintentional drug overdose. And last month, 128 people called poison centers in the state regarding the use of opioids. In January, there were nearly 300 calls. Jerry Wiesenhahn, a pharmacist at the Cincinnati Drug and Poison Information Center at Cincinnati Children, says they've seen an increase in prescription drug overdoses as they've tracked the epidemic.
Really, poison centers were on the front end of starting to identify the fact that not only is heroin itself a problem, but there's a huge problem with adulterated heroin out there, mixing different chemicals in there, some of which can enhance the potency of heroin and make it even more deadly.
Wiesenhahn says any drug used above the therapeutic dose is potentially dangerous, and he advises Ohioans to call the poison hotline at 1-800-222-1222 if they suspect a possible poisoning. According to the CDC, every day opioid misuse sends about 1,000 Americans to emergency rooms and is behind the drug overdose deaths of nearly 44 people each day. This is National Poison Prevention Week. Mary Sherman reporting.
You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is Rebecca Williamson with KNSJ Radio with an education report. Back in 1897, William McKinley was sworn in as President of the United States. Queen Victoria celebrated her Diamond Jubilee in England. The Klondike Gold Rush began, and San Diego State University was born. This week, the university is celebrating its 120th anniversary. The school's first campus was located in downtown San Diego and was called the State Normal School of San Diego. It was just a few rented stores upstairs above a drugstore. 7 teachers taught English, math, and history to 91 students back then. The campus later moved to University Heights and eventually to its current location. The name changed to San Diego State Teachers College, and in 1960, it became part of the new California State College system. 3 years later, President John F. Kennedy gave the commencement address at San Diego State University and received the university's first honorary doctorate. In the early 1970s, San Diego State College became the San Diego State University. And now in its 120th year, SDSU has a 300-acre campus here in San Diego, as well as a satellite campus in Calexico. Today, SDSU is educating 35,000 students, has 1,700 full and part-time faculty, and has over 291,000 living alumni with degrees. San Diego State University also contributes billions of dollars each year to California's economy. It is now ranked among the nation's top 75 public universities and top 150 national universities in U.S. News and World Report's annual ranking of America's best colleges. The university plans an open house on March 18th to mark its 120th year of educating students here in San Diego.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.